loud and cruel with a raven's cry. He's the feasted on the field, saying, "Beck, water cold and clear, will never clean your wounds. There's none but the maid of the winding mirror can make you hale and soon." He said, "Course well, my brindled hounds, and fetch me the mountain hare, whose coat is as gray as the west water, or as white as the lily fair." They said, "Green moss and heather will bear staunch the flood. There's none but the witch of the Westmere land can save thy dear life's blood. So turn, turn thy valiant head, till his red mane flies in the wind, and the rider of the moon goes by, and the bright star falls behind." And clear was the paly moon when his shadow passed him by. Below the hill was the brightest star when he heard the owl at twilight. By the winding mirror, then fly free, a good gray hawk, to gather the golden rod, and face your horse into the clouds upon yon gay green wood. And it's wearied by the old water, and the misty breaks her way, till through the cleft of the curtain pass the winding water lay. Just mount and walk, but come when you hear my call,
when you hear my
and answer with the call. For here the sun shall rise this morning, you will serve me best of all. And it's down to the water's brim, he's borne the rowan shield, and the golden rod he has cast in, to see what the lake might yield. And wet rose she from the lake, and fast and fleet went she, one half the form of a maiden fair, with a jet black mare's body. Now loud, long, and shrilly blue, and his steed was by his side. High overhead, gray hawk flew, and swiftly he did ride. Taking course, well, my brindled hound, and fetch me the jet black mare. Stoop and strike my good gray hawk, and bring me the maid in the bed. That flows, now we're wounded in the field. And she stood in a gown of the velvet blue, bound round with a silver chain. And she kissed his pale lips once and twice, and three times round again. And she found his wound with the golden rod, full fast in her arms he lay. And he has risen hale and soon, with the sun high in the day. Then ride with thy brindled hound at heel, and thy good gray hawk in hand. Let none can harm the knight who's lain, or the witch of the Westmere land. There's none can harm the knight who's lain, or the witch of the Westmere land.
Hi, welcome to Woodwolf's Radio yet again for another Tarot Tuesday with Joy and Brian. Episode number 3 tonight, so we're going to be talking about the Major Arcana 2 and 3 and the 2s. And in the second half, if you are feeling bold tonight, you can dial the number 646-564-9966 and maybe have a short reading done. So, welcome, Joy. Thanks for coming again.
Hey, Brian. Not a problem. I love doing this show. Okay, well, let's just jump into it. I hope everybody's got their favorite tarot deck out and that they pulled the number 2 major arcana and the number 3 major arcana, which are respectively the High Priestess and the Empress. Those are the ones we're going to be talking about tonight. Also, if you haven't already done it, please go through your deck and pull out the 2s from the minor arcana and set them aside because we're going to be talking about them in a little while. But for now, we're going to talk about the High Priestess. Now, the High Priestess in the tarot deck, the way Rider-Waite set it up when it initially started, as far as I can tell, it was meant to be somewhat of a female companion to the magician. Not necessarily his opposite, but his equal and his partner in a lot of ways. In that, the magician is able to create from the ethers whatever he needs and manifest it in his life. Well, the High Priestess not only can do that herself, even though it's a minor part of her abilities, but she is the keeper of knowledge and the way you go about manifesting those things. You hold this knowledge in your mind and these rituals and the way and the process of doing things. And she is the keeper of those secrets, and she is the person that presents that knowledge to the magician so that he can manifest what he needs. In the Journey of the Fool that we talked about a little bit last time, this is the second card that the Fool comes to. He has to win past the High Priestess to progress. And as a keeper of knowledge, as a keeper of secrets, she has to basically judge him worthy. So in that duty also, she is also acting as a High Priestess in that she initiates the Fool into the deeper mysteries of life and that he can move through those. Let's see, in the Robin Wood deck that I'm looking at, the High Priestess is very much a pagan Wiccan priestess. She has a chaplet on her head, has a moon symbol on it. It's nighttime as opposed to the magician's daytime. She has, you know, her ritual robes on. It is obviously an outdoor ceremony. And kind of to echo the magician as well, she has, instead of candles behind her, trees. And where the magician had black and white candles, black on the left hand, white on the right hand, she has a black tree on the left hand and a white tree on the right hand. So once again, you get the attachment with the Kabbalah with the middle pillar, the left pillar, and the right pillar. Let me see. I'm trying to pull out the Robin Wood book that I took to work so that I can make any notes that I've got here. Let me see. The key words for the High Priestess are wisdom and compassion. She teaches not through harshness, really. She teaches very much like a female in that she presents the lesson to you, and if you don't learn it, she presents the lesson to you again. And if you still don't learn it, she presents the lesson to you again. And she keeps presenting the lesson over and over and over until you actually get it. So the way to move past her is, in a lot of ways, to actually learn what she's trying to teach you. And she doesn't do it, you know, to be mean. She realizes that this is something that you have to know, and this is something that you have to move past. Now, one of the traditional one of the traditional symbols is that the High Priestess is outside at night. It is a full moon, and typically under the moon, there are secrets, and secrets are usually kept. Well, she is the secret keeper. She is the tradition keeper. She is the ritual keeper. As I said, she does initiate people into the various mysteries of the goddess and allows them to move past all of that. In the deck itself, the meaning is stated that she is practicality, good judgment, wisdom, mystery, a clouded future, a woman of interest to the seeker or the seeker herself. The High Priestess can represent a woman, but I tend to use the Empress more as a representative of a female, simply due to the fact that the High Priestess is a specialized female. She is actually a priestess. She is a holy female, one that is learned in spiritual matters, whereas the Empress is much more earthy. She is down to earth. She is about fertility. She is the culmination of a lot of queens. And so that's a good segue into the next card, which is the Empress herself. The Empress is an older lady in this deck. She is sitting outside. She's spinning. She's got various symbols of fertility around her. She has a heart on as a decoration behind her, which represents romance and love and emotions. She actually also looks a little pregnant. She's got what looks to be, at least if I can see it, a rabbit in her lap. And usually that is, no, I'm sorry, that's a pile of wool that she's spinning out. Okay, my mistake. Anyway.
No worries.
Yeah. But her meaning, when in a reading, comes up with fertility, good advice, safety, security, and things along that nature. When I actually look at the Empress in the Pagan deck, she is depicted as a grandmotherly figure in a home with her daughter, the mother, and her child, her grandchild. And this is very reminiscent of the Maiden Mother Crone cycle, with the Empress being the crone. But one of the things that struck me very, very hard when I first encountered the Empress was that she is the combination of all four queens, and the Emperor himself is the combination of all four kings. Each of the kings and each of the queens have very specific jobs that they do. And just really quickly, because we're going to get into them much later, the Queen of Cups does divination. She looks into her cup, and she's seeing faraway places, and she's dreaming, and she's, you know, gathering knowledge that she can esoterically. The Queen of Pentacles is very much into the fertility and making abundance and a happy home and a financially stable home, as for examples. The Empress, on the other hand, not only has those qualities, but she's also the stone-cold bitch that'll rip your head off if you screw with her. She is also the kind and gentle airhead who has never grown past 12 years old, really, as she grew up. So you have to keep in mind that the Empress, in a lot of ways, is a multiple person, not in that she's got distinct personalities, but that she combines within herself all of the qualities of a female. The only things that I can think of that aren't part of her personality as usual is the combative female warrior. And that tends to come up in another card, if that's going to be part of it. Although, when I go to the Celtic Tarot, she is represented by the Mordiggan, who is a combative female goddess. But the Mordiggan actually was also a mother, and a lot of people don't remember that that's part of her myth cycle. She had a child. And she lost her child. Her child was killed, and that's one reason why she's mad all the time. She was also a prophetess. She, in the second battle of Moytura, where they are trying to take over from Balor, the Firbolag, the Doida sleeps with her at one point before the battle. and she falls in love with him, and he falls in love with her, and she makes a prophecy before the battle starts, and says that she will use her spells and her will to take away the Furbolag's, is it the Furbolag? No, the Formorians. The Formorians' courage and take away their ability to do anything. And basically, mythically and in a spell casting type of way, counter anything that they can do. So she's also that. She's not just an insane go out and kill everything that moves like Mars is. Let's see, back to the High Priestess. In the High Priestess in the Celtic Tarot, she's represented by Bree. In the story, The Transformation of Bree, she was the daughter of the Doida but married to a Fomori, and she was appraised of the death of her son, and she started to weep in despair. She wound up disfiguring one side of her face and essentially becoming the Celtic version of Hela from the Norse mythology, and representing loss and representing also the ability and the spirit to continue. And once again, she represents secrets and, the knowledge carrier. In the pagan tarot, once again, the High Priestess is a High Priestess, and she's shown in that card with her coven and being the priestess of that coven. Let me see. Oh, and here it says that when the High Priestess is reversed, that represents passion, conceit, lack of sense, poor intuition, ignorance, and bad judgment, which would make sense given that she is the keeper of knowledge, the keeper of secrets, who passes that on to other people. Bad judgment would come out of that, out of the reverse of the High Priestess. Conceit, I don't know anybody in the pagan communities who have not run into somebody with High Priestess syndrome, and that's a perfect example of conceit and lack of sense, and poor intuition for that matter, where all you can think of is your own self-aggrandizement and your own promotion of your cronies. Let's see. What else are we talking about here? In the Rider-Waite deck, there is a lot of meaning, and I'll let you guys get your own books and go through those. Once again, we've got symbols all over the place for each of these. Let me see. I'm trying to think of anything else I can say on these two because, I mean, I've got 20 minutes to fill here, another 10 minutes to fill before I can move on to the twos.
Well, I think with the High Priestess, what you're dealing with is, like, in certain readings it'll come up, and that tends to represent this perfect female lover who is, like, kind of the epitome of every fantasy. And you're dealing with kind of that initiator into sexual mysteries and, that post-puberty period of adolescence where you're kind of growing into your sexuality and learning about your body and sort of putting your seed out there, and this can symbolically represent, like, creativity, fertility on multiple levels, but the High Priestess also represents kind of like intuition.
Well, intuition, definitely, but I don't know about so much with the sexual mysteries and stuff. Sexual mysteries I can actually understand, but the growing and the coming into puberty, I think that would be more represented by the lovers than the High Priestess. If you want a female representation who's sexual, the Empress is the perfect card for that because she is, very earthy, very here, and, represents fertility itself.
That's true. And I mean, in Eden Gray's book, she's described as the goddess of love, the symbol of universal fecundity, fertility. Mm. You know, she's like the high priestess. Is like if she basically, it's like if the high priestess is Isis veiled, this unknown mystery. The empress herself is Isis, the Egyptian divine mother, unveiled in her full glory, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's really good. In fact, so that's really easy to relate to.
And like again, the high priestess represents kind of the virgin state of the divine feminine, whereas the empress is her fertile mother stage, not yet approaching cronehood. But, you know, if you're looking at different decks, there's going to be symbols in each of those decks that are discussed individually.
Which is why it's so important to get the book that comes along with the deck, even if you have to spend a little extra money, because those symbols become really, really important, especially when a minor aspect of a card jumps up in a reading. Okay, so let's see. The Empress is very much, I don't know, I do see her as a crone, though, as a woman who is mature in her late 50s or so, as a grandmotherly type person. A MILF for some people that think about things like that. She is somebody who's gone through a lot of things in her life. She has brought families through, and she is, you know, raised a family and helped her husband, the emperor, create, you know, this kingdom, this empire. And that takes a lot of work, not just from his side, but from her side as well. Because in any good marriage, it's supposed to be a partnership. And that partnership is what's important. So, let's see. But, yeah, the trying to think of there's something else that... Oh, the mythical journey of the fool. When he gets to the Empress, that can be a very big stopping point, because the Empress is, by her very nature, intimidating. She's, you know, there to scare people, whereas in some ways the High Priestess, in a spiritual sense, is there to be nurturing and to help you grow as a person spiritually. The Empress is really, you know, okay, why aren't you doing this? You know you're supposed to be doing it. You want to do it. You've been being told you're supposed to do it. So what's the disconnect here? Why aren't you doing this? And poking you with a stick to get you to do what you need to do. She is very much a Yoda-type person in a lot of ways, I think. Poking you and going again, 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 again when you don't get it right. Let's see. So that's what I have for those two cards. I'm going to take a glance in the chat room here and see. No, there's no questions. All right, well, so I guess we're going to move on to the minor arcana at this point. If you have your twos, please pull them out, take a look at them. The twos as a class are about choices, okay? Just about every single card represents a choice between something and something else. In some cases, it's a very obvious choice. For instance, the Two of Swords is a very obvious choice about whether to stay where you're at with a pair of swords up against your neck and a blindfold on, or whether to take them down and throw them away and get on with your life. It's very cut and dried. It's very blatant. With the Two of Rods, you have a choice between the spiritual world and the physical world, the world of the spirit. And you can, what's not rods is that there is a third choice for having both at the same time instead of just one or the other. With the Two of Cups, it is not really a choice between you and your lover or you and what you want. It's more of a choice between being so tightly focused on something and being focused on the world instead. Because when you look at the Two of Cups, it's two people, and they're exchanging cups. They're holding each other's hands, and they're looking so deeply into each other's eyes that the rest of the world has gone away. They don't notice this giant Caduceus with wings and a lion's head flying out of the cups because they're so focused on themselves. Okay, so that's choice of being able to look at other things and being in limerence, as it's called at times. With the Two of Coins, you have a choice between, it's a balancing act. It's not necessarily a choice between one thing and another. It's a choice between coping with a situation or ceasing to cope with it and falling off the tightrope and dropping the juggling balls and having a disaster on your hands. Okay, so twos are typically all about choices. Now, as I went through the cards really quickly as to what their various meanings are, but there's more depth there. Remember, the Pentacles are about the physicality, the here and now, money. And you have, in this case, a choice. It's usually a financial choice of some sort. And it is an ability to do several things at once. In the Robin Wood deck, she puts the infinity sign in there. And as I said last week, you have when you have infinity symbolized in the card somewhere, there are extenuating circumstances, and you have somebody with quite a number of psychic gifts along. So you have somebody who can be harmonious inside of themselves and can cope with the situation that they're in. A lot of people also see that since this is a guy on a tightrope who's using the Pentacles as juggling balls, that it also means fun and games. But more than that, I see this as always being balanced, being in control of yourself. Having your own internal sense of where you're going and what you're doing. With the Swords, remember that this is also air, and swords are about conflict. So normally when you're sitting in a rocky scarp with tide coming in a billowy gown with the wind blowing and a pair of swords up against your throat while you're blindfolded, this is usually something you're going to be fighting or some sort of combat or something. I would probably, if it came up in a reading, tend to interpret this as it's a self-made situation where you have chosen through your actions and through your inactions to be in this position. You are choosing to stay in this position because she's not bound there anyway. She's not tied. She's not helpless. The only thing that she has is she's blindfolded. And that can be taken away at any point in time. She can put the swords down if she wants to. This is a self-made situation where she's made the choice to be there. And through her own actions. And she has the ability to choose not to be there as well. The Two of Cups, like I said, is about being so involved with somebody that you are consumed with them. But also more than that, it is two opposite forces, male and female, blonde and a blackhead, a good guy and a bad guy, who are combined as one to make something greater than the sum of its parts. Okay? It can be friendship, it can be love, it can be a platonic love. It can be more than that, a cooperation and harmony. But that's what the Two of Cups is about, because that's also about the emotions. So it is cooperating with somebody outside of yourself to create something even more than what you two are by yourselves. Two of Rods, like I said, it's choices between one thing and another, usually the realm of the mystical and the realm of the physical. But more than that, it is also a time where you're waiting. It is a temporary break, but it's not necessarily a long-term break. It's, how can I put this? It's a watch and wait situation where you've done everything you can. Things are going to either progress or they're not, and you have no further control over it, and you can't move forward until you actually see what they're going to have happen. Okay. Well, that's my show, because I've run out of things to say at this point. Let's see, I can go to the other...
Well, I think, too, that what you can sort of see in any of the pip cards is their relationship to any of the major arcana that numerologically ties together with them. So you're looking at, like, the 11... Trump, which memory has completely eluded me on, is justice, apparently. So, again, you're dealing with that sort of balance, duality sort of situation in any reading. And, like, in kind of the Two of Cups, you're dealing with kind of a balanced, harmonious partnership, relationship, friendship. With the Two of Swords, you're dealing with that sort of tension, that moment of uncertainty. And, you know, so there's a more serious side to that relationship. The Wands, as far as I tend to sort of think of them, are tools of control. So the duality of having two rods is kind of that kind of choosing between two leaders, decisions, even mentors kind of thing. But I mean, generally, you know, you're also dealing with kind of that on a higher level, you're dealing with the lovers as well, you know, six being a multiple of two.
Yeah, and I did notice that they have a lot of similarities with some of the Trump cards, like you said, like the Major Arcana. And it's interesting that the Two of Swords is very, very similar in design in a lot of ways to the 11 of Justice, which, you know, has a sword. She has a cup. There's balance scales. The Two of Swords sometimes can represent balance because she's, you know, the lady on the two is in a very precarious situation. If she shifts to around too much, she's going to fall. So there's that too, and you're right. There is those relationships to each other. I'm looking at the Pagan Tarot here, and some of the symbology has changed a little bit, and it's very, very interesting. The Two of Rods, while it still means the same thing, waiting to see if plants bear fruit, kindness and generosity, the Two of Wands has a lady who has been hiking and is holding one wand in her hand, and there's another one in the ground, so she's obviously been using it as something to move through the woods with. But it's smoking, the one that's in the ground holding her pack, because apparently she used it up. And she's got the other wand, which is not smoking, and it still seems to be pointing a direction for her, which is interesting. Sorry, I don't have the physical cards here, so I'm looking at these on the computer. And some of these are the first time I'm seeing them. So it's interesting to see different shades of meaning in these. The Two of Chalices in the Pagan Tarot has a lady sitting in front of a mirror at her makeup table, and she's seeing somebody completely different in the mirror, even though that person is still aping her actions, reflecting her actions. So that's an interesting, that's a yin and yang type of situation there, which I find very, very interesting, because that's, once again, going back to the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, if you look at it from a psychological standpoint, you're looking at shadow and kind of the main persona,
mm-hmm.
each of which, you know, reflects the other. And at the same time, I mean, you're dealing with that sort of situation where anything that seems difficult in a relationship may just be your projection of a problem you have onto the other person as the source of it.
And that's a very, very good point, too. If you were looking for a significator for somebody that was a Gemini, this would probably be one of the best ones that you could pick if you weren't going to use the major arcana for it. Let's see. The reversed meanings, according to the Pagan Tarot, the reversed Two of Pentacles is too much to handle, instability, lack of control, and a forced gaiety. Wherein it's not something that, it's called the cheerleader smile, I think, because it's not something you're actually feeling. You're actually in a lot of pain, you're hurting, but because it's what you're supposed to project for other people to relate to, you're still smiling and looking cheerful and enthusiastic, even though that's the last emotion you feel. For the Two of Swords, the reversed meaning is waiting is over. The stalemate has ended. Beware of a new situation. The seeker or someone who knows the seeker may travel soon. That one, okay, I can see how a reversed of somebody sitting on an escarpment who can't move might travel soon. That would make a little sense. But, yeah, it's time to put down the swords, take them away from your throat, and take control of your own life and carry on. The Two of Cups reversed shows loss of balance, violent passion, love becoming hate, and misunderstanding. And anytime you have a dark side with anything, that can change very, very quickly. It doesn't take very much for a coin that's standing on its edge to fall to one side or the other. And it's kind of random as to which face is going to be up. Is it going to be heads or is it going to be tails? So this is something that you want to remind yourself over and over with twos. They're duality. And the dual nature of the twos is going to mean that anytime you have a reversed reading for those cards, you're going to have to deal with that dual nature. The reversal for the Two of Wands. Seeker must avoid impatience. Empty success, good beginnings go sour, and domination by others. I don't understand the domination by others. However, the rest of them are fairly accurate because if you're being impatient, you're not waiting for good things to come. You're not waiting for the world. What you're doing is you're trying to force your will upon the world, and sometimes it's not a good thing.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm just wondering maybe if the domination of by others, because when you've got the upright Two of Wands, what you're dealing with is kind of a person who's in charge of the fact that these two control items are, you know, being held and, you know, in their own control. So they have a handle on the situation. Whereas if it's reversed, you're dealing with kind of a loss of that control. You know,
that's
not no longer, yeah, no longer being kind of in charge of your own shit kind of thing. So, you know, losing control, having someone else kind of stomp in and take over because they see that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and that makes perfect sense given that context. Excellent. All right, something I hadn't considered. So we learn something new every day.
And for the Two of Cups, I was kind of thinking, because that's kind of that new beginning point in a relationship, you're dealing with kind of the honeymoon period of every relationship where you don't see the faults in the person. Nothing can ever be seen as wrong by that person. You know, they're basically perfect in your eyes. And if you reverse that, what you're dealing with is, you know, that kind of sense that the honeymoon is over. Suddenly, you're getting to the nitty gritty of the relationship. And it's kind of that moment, just after the honeymoon. Yeah. Where you're kind of tested and, you know, the strength of the real relationship is under fire kind of thing. Because suddenly, something's come up in the, you know, in that situation where, you know, no longer do you have that fawning kind of idealistic approach to the relationship, but rather the gloves are off kind of thing. You're seeing each other as you really are. And, you know, it's kind of the point at which the relationship becomes tempered or incinerated kind of thing.
Yeah, because at this point in relationships in general, after you get through the limerence phase, remember when you're dating, you're on your best behavior and looking your best for the person you're trying to attract. That's the whole point of dating. And so you've got, you know, your pretty makeup on, your nice dress, and you're wearing a girdle to hold your stomach in. Well, once you get married and everything, that may continue for a little while, but eventually what's going to happen is your partner's going to wake up next to you and see you without any of that on, and they're going to see your moles, and they're going to see the flaws in your skin, and they're going to see that you're slightly overweight. And then it's, you know, a case, like you said, of either getting past that and accepting that, or having the relationship fall apart because it's based on, you know, things that don't really matter in the long run or shouldn't matter.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like in the beginning of a relationship, you're seeing, you're basically putting your best foot forward. You know, you're only showing the cards that you want the other person to see, the interest that you that you want them to be impressed by kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
or your education or what have you. Once, you know, that period is over, it's kind of like the light goes on in the middle of, you know, that, you know, night of passion kind of thing, where suddenly everything is unveiled, you know. Suddenly you're not looking quite as flawless as you did in the club lights or what have you, or under the influence of drugs and alcohol. Kind of thing, you know. Suddenly it's like, oh, this is a real person and they're not as faultless as I imagine them to be.
No, yeah, exactly. Okay, I'm looking at, let's see, Housewives Tarot. This is a fun tarot. If you've never looked at the Housewives Tarot, it is 1950s kitsch that is made into a tarot deck, and it's absolutely fantastic. Let's see. Is there anything? No, pretty much all the same things. Oh, I see.
Yeah, I imagine that the twos in every deck, regardless of the artwork, are going to have some similarities. But again, a reminder that if you're going to get any deck, make sure you get familiar with the symbolism in the deck, because some are really, really focused on the artwork. And once you're kind of sitting down to read them, you have no clue where you're at, because the artwork is so elaborate or so themed, it just doesn't come across as reading the way that, like, the Rider-Waite or the decks based off of it would read.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, there are some that I think are better suited to more experienced or, you know, someone who doesn't want to go through the traditional route of learning the tarot. Like, I think it's called the Crow's Magic Tarot, where, you know, I saw this deck and it looked beautiful and it was like near Halloween and I was shopping around for a deck and this deck stood out as just perfect kind of thing. And then I flipped through all the cards and I was like, wow, I can't even get a sense of what any of these mean because the suits were weird. You know, the artwork was just really specialized. And then of course there's a deck that's actually, if you're really into like kitschy kind of themes for your decks, like if you want to have one that you use for Halloween parties, the I think it's the Halloween Tarot has really cartoony kind of traditional Halloween art. And the first time I saw the Chariot card, it's actually like a purple hearse, something along the line of the Munstermobile.
Oh my lord.
Yeah, so the first thing I thought when I saw that card was like the Munsters theme. So, I mean, if you are looking for a deck that really represents you or that you want to select specifically for a period of the year, like, I don't know if there's any Yuletide decks because I've never looked for one, but, you know, if you want to go for like a Samhain or Halloween type deck, there's tons that you can use. If you're into a particular subculture, steampunk or goth or, you know, vampire lifestyler or something like that, then, I mean, there's tons of decks like that. You know, there's all kinds of other ones that come up. And some of them are a little weird as far as the time period being depicted in the cards. There's one deck that I picked up just because I saw the Hermit once on Tumblr, and I was just floored by this deck, at least by the Hermit. And it's the Cosmic Tarot, which, you know, the Hermit is this blue-skinned kind of mystic with, like, arcane symbols all around him. He's kind of like a hippie stoner mystic who's just meditating and, you know, this kind of thing. And you flip through the other cards, and they're very 70s, 80s kind of artistically, fashion-wise and that sort of thing. So if you don't really connect with that time period, it's going to be a little awkward for you to read that. Now, listeners, if any of you wants to call in with a question, you know, by all means, do so. Don't be afraid to. It's 646-564-9966. And, I mean, Joy and I are here. If you want to call in for a quick reading tonight, by all means, do that as well. We'd love you.
Yeah, just to let you know, most of the interpretation of these cards is not only up to the individual reader, but it's also experience. And we can tell you the meanings all day long of what the cards are, but it's still going to come down to what the meaning, what the card is telling you it means. And that's really the important key whenever you're doing a reading like this. And more than that, you know, like tonight, I learned that there's, you know, other nuances to some of these cards that I hadn't even considered. So your feedback, your talking to us is important. It helps us not only learn, but it helps us also redefine what we're trying to say, and it may, you know, give us an aspect to something that we hadn't thought about. There's nobody in the chat. As far as I know, there's nobody on the phone. So, you know, it's just the two of us sitting here that are talking back and forth about all of this, and while it's interesting, you know, there's only so far that we can go before we start falling over and talking about the same thing again.
It's true. So what I guess we could do, actually, is play another Isaac Bonowitz song and, you know, give ourselves a break from talking.
Yes, we could. I guess you could. So as far as I know, this is going to be the Hymn to the Doida.
Yes,
please enjoy it.
Thank you.
Okay, well, welcome back into the second hour of Tarot Talk number 3 here. My name is Joy, and Brian is going to stick his nose in whenever he can.
Certainly will.
We're going to be talking a little bit about not only readings and the decks themselves, but how to interact with them and how to set them up and get to know the decks so that you can use them for readings. One of the things that I was taught when I was starting out was that anytime you get a new deck, you want to spend as much time as you can actually physically handling the deck. What this is going to do is it's going to teach you what the deck's energy feels like, but also it's going to put your energy into the deck. It will allow you to get a start, at least, on the feel of the personality of the deck and how it's going to work for you, and let the deck know that you are the person that they should be reading for. And when I say that, you know, we talk about the personalities for the various tarot decks and things like that, and what I'm talking about is there is a quality that a lot of inanimate objects have that you can feel if you are attuned to that or if you're looking for it. And it's not really anything that is blatantly obvious, but if you're quiet mentally and you're just holding something, an object will feel comforting, or it will feel proper, or it will feel cold, or it will feel like it should belong to somebody else. And these are the feelings that I'm talking about, and this is where the personality of the tarot deck comes from. you start getting a sense of how this deck is going to read based on that feel. And you only get that by actually sitting with the cards in your hand and going through them. I've ruined two tarot decks simply by playing with them, not doing readings with them, but just going through the cards one after another, looking at the artwork, looking at the card itself, reminding myself with various mnemonics and things what the card means, and just getting a feel for its personality. The advantage of doing this is that once it's done, you get a real deep sense of the meaning. And like I keep saying, minor aspects of various cards are going to jump out once you start doing the reading, once you have that feel of the personality and that feel for the different cards. And when I say jump out, I mean you're going to turn up, let's say, the Lovers, or even better, let's say the Empress, because we'll relate it back to the cards tonight. You're going to turn up the Empress, and that typically means an older woman, somebody who is, you know, concerned with fertility, like we talked about. But in this case, we're going to see the fact that she has a skein of unspun wool in her hand. And for some reason, that tiny little element, which is a very minor piece of the card, is going to scream at you that this is important. And it could mean that this is somebody that does handcrafting in this case, which is another duty of the Empress. And those are things that you need to pay attention to because they're important. As you get into reading for others, those little bitty aspects become so important when you're to validate you, as it were. Because a lot of people are skeptics. They don't believe that this works. They don't believe that tarot actually does anything. But once you start noticing those little bitty aspects and those things that jump out at you, and you start mentioning it, it goes a long way to telling the person that, yeah, you actually know what you're doing, and it shocks them most of the time. I've stunned a number of people by picking out this tiny little detail that the cards were telling me was important to this person, that was a minor aspect of a card or a minor aspect of the reading. And I've mentioned it in passing, and they were just, you know, floored that I would be able to pick up on that. And that's, whereas the tarot itself tends to be a tool. It's a crutch in a lot of ways for interpreting the connection that you have to, some people say the Akashic Record, others say to God or the gods, or to whatever creation in some cases. Whatever it is that speaks to us all the time in the back of our head and is the still small voice that people tell us that we're supposed to listen to. Those that connection is almost critical to our life. And the tarot is a tool to allow us to interpret what would be something so quiet that we couldn't normally notice it in such a way that it becomes a much louder voice. Edgar Cayce had a wonderful book on channeling where he talks at length about that connection to everything and listening for that voice. The tarot and other divinatory tools like pendulums or runestones or dowsing rods or opening a book to a random page and reading a statement out of it, all of those are a way of interpreting and sharpening that connection and getting used to hearing that and sensitizing yourself to it. Let's see. I'm trying to think of something else that I can mention on this and kind of
well,
run
I think,
dry here.
it's kind of a part of, like, even just the beginning of a spiritual path, or even kind of something that you can pick up in the midst of your walk. The idea of developing that better connection through, you know, meditation anywhere. Like, if you want to develop a better relationship just to the sort of general sense of your intuition, or to the spirits of the place that you live in, or any of that sort of thing, what you can do is take yourself out and take your deck out to a park. You know, take yourself out of your normal routine, because what you'll find is that when you can move yourself physically out of the areas that you normally operate in, you'll find yourself shaken out of the normal way that you operate. Your mind will open to new perceptions that are different from the habituated kind of responses that you'll have to even handling your deck, or to kind of the way you do readings. Because what happens with a lot of people as they're learning tarot, or, you know, any sort of divination tool, is that they develop this routine where they kind of have to have a certain setup arranged. And what will happen over time is that your mind shuts down, because it becomes so habituated to that empty habit, that empty repetition of you know, practice, where it, you know, it's kind of like the same thing as growing up in a church, where you're just used to going every Sunday to this same repetition of ritual. Your mind shuts down, because it becomes kind of just instinctive, like second nature to sort of practice that way. So if you want to get yourself familiar with a new, like with your tarot deck in a new way, something that will awaken you to new possibilities with the same deck that you've worked with for months or years, take it out of the normal areas that you work in. Take it down to a local coffee shop, where, you know, the chances are that someone's going to spot you with the tarot deck out on your table and kind of sit down and want to talk to you about it and, you know, discuss the symbolism behind the card. So you may pick up something new from that. You know, if you're in the park, you may have some, you know, awakening moment where the card that's sitting in front of you, say the Nine of Pentacles, which represents kind of a connection to nature, you know, that kind of, I like to perceive it as a hippie chick kind of situation, but, you know, it can represent, there can be that moment where something happens where you just kind of become aware of deeper meaning for that card in the situation that you're in. Don't be afraid to, like, move yourself out of your traditional workspace. You know, fly by the seat of your pants as far as readings are concerned. If you're kind of very routine and structured in the way that you do your readings, take yourself to a coffee shop or somewhere where there's people and, you know, new situations where, or if you can find one, maybe like a tarot meetup kind of thing, where you're going to interact with a whole group of new people.
Oh, yeah, and there was this one girl who was talking to me on Tumblr not too long ago. She was asking how to get practice with doing readings and such. And one of the things that I told her was, look, go down to a coffee shop. Take your deck with you. Go to the library. Take your deck with you. Because in the library you can, you know, look at the various tarot books that they've got on the shelf, and you can and have them out, and you'll be, you know, dealing with them. You've got your deck there. You can look at stuff. And people will come over, and they'll, you know, because people are nosy, they'll, you know, be looking at your deck and go, oh, that's a pretty card. What does it mean? And you can explain it to them, and you can reference various books.
And it occurs to me that if you're in a coffee shop, you could say, well, I'll give you a reading if you buy me a coffee.
Well,
or something
that
along
too.
That line. I mean, you might make a new friend who just becomes a regular practice reader, you know, reading practice person, or, you know, you might score a free coffee from the manager if you give them a reading or something, you know.
Or if you become popular there, you might even get a job doing a weekly gig.
That's,
you know,
true.
I've people that, you know, were doing regular readings at work, in one place that I worked at, who were, you know, charging $2, $5 on their lunch time, and they became known for it. And, you know, people would section out a part of their day to go and get this reading. There was a lady that, actually the person that got me interested in tarot, was a lady by the name of Ruth, who would attend Dragon Con quite a lot. And while I was there, and she had a wonderful deck of cards called the Tarot of the Cat People. And I would seek her out at the conventions when I would go there, because I knew she would have her cards with her. I knew she would be reading, and I'd ask her for readings. Turns out that Ruth was taught by the same person that taught me. So it was kind of interesting, and I learned from the same source she did. And it's one of those, you know, things where the more you practice with it, the better you're going to get, the better your connection's going to get to them, the better the connection to everything is going to be, the more you're going to be confident in what you're doing and how you're doing it, and the more feedback you're going to get. And, you know, it's just a snowball that starts rolling down the hill. Something that you mentioned a few moments ago, I was trying to remember what was going on.
Tarot at the coffee shop. Random.
That. Oh, we started talking about getting used to your deck, and I had gotten sidetracked, as I normally do. The thing that I was going to say was, when I was taught, one of the things that I was told to do was to sleep with the deck under my pillow. And that's a really good thing to do. You don't want to, you know, put the individual cards under your pillow. You don't want to leave them scattered around under your pillow, because you're going to knock them around. But leaving them in the box or putting them in a bag, and putting them under your pillow while you sleep is a really good way to get your energy and their energy exchanged. Because when you're asleep, you don't have up those mental shields that you have during your awake time. Everybody's got these barriers that they have around their head when they're awake. It can be something as simple as, I don't want to talk to you, go away. It can be something as complex as racism or classism or, you know, ooh, you stink, get the heck away from me. And you put out these vibrations all the time. Well, that interferes with your ability to connect to the tarot deck. But when you're asleep, those barriers are withdrawn. They're pulled down because your brain is shut off. You're not consciously pushing against other people to get them away from you or to bring them to you. You are in a state where you are more receptive to energies around you, which is why, you know, you're told not to watch scary movies before you go to bed. And you're more susceptible to broadcasting your energies out to something else. Well, with the cards right there, and since you're wanting to absorb their energy and you're wanting to project your energy to them, it's a perfect exchange medium, and you don't even have to do anything. I mean, all you got to do is go to sleep. So that's what I wanted. That was the point that I wanted to make. Standing here pacing around the room, trying to think of various things to talk about. Oh, one thing that the Robin Wood deck is set up to do. There's a book that I mentioned last week called Tarot Spells, In the tarot spells book, the deck that they use is the Robin Wood deck. I don't know why she chose to do that, but I was glad that she did because it taught me a lot about how to use tarot decks for things other than just readings. The tarot is a wonderful tool to be able to pull information from the ethers through and to be able to gain insights that you might not have in other aspects of your life. But in any case, when you have something along those, when you have a tool like this, it's for use multiple different ways. It's not just a divination tool. One of the things that we wound up doing when we didn't have a whole lot of money was using the tarot for representations in our rituals. Let's face it, pagan ritual materials are expensive. I know very few people who have a silver chalice sitting on their shelf that have all the symbols that are supposed to be engraved on it, actually engraved on it, starting out in their life. If they do, they're incredibly lucky. But just taking a regular cup and getting that carved so that it has the proper symbols on it and dedicating it to the goddess takes time and resources. Well, if you don't have those that time and resources or you can't spend that money, what are different ways to reach the same ends? Well, one of those ways is to use the tarot deck. I mean, a ritual is a way of symbolizing an outcome. It is a way of going through a process where your entire being, your entire focus is on what you're doing and what you want the outcome to be. Whether it be a blessing, whether it be contacting the deities, whether it be getting in touch with your ancestors or the inner parts of yourself, there's an end, and the ritual itself is a way to get to that end. If you don't have the proper symbols, any symbol will do. As long as it has meaning to you, as long as it is something that you can relate to and something that is going to be of use in those parts. For instance, we didn't have the money to be able to afford representations of the Lord and Lady. For me, the Lord is the Horned Lord, Lord Hearn, and our goddess is the Lady Rhiannon of the Birds. And we didn't have, you know, you couldn't even find statues of the Lady Rhiannon or Lord Hearn, so we had to sort of make do. And one of those things that we made do with was the tarot cards. The magician is an absolutely wonderful pictorial relation for Lord Hearn. He's a pagan priest. He's got a deer cap on with the antlers still attached, and I can't think of anything better to represent the Lord of the Herds except that. And, in fact, I still use that as his representation today. 20 years later, even though we can afford various other things. So anytime, you know, you can use something along those lines, the tarot is wonderful for that, if only because you're going to be using a symbolic item to symbolize something that you want anyway.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, if you're a writer or a poet or anything like that, and you have one of those days where nothing's flowing for you, you're just not having that creative spark, what you can actually do is take the major arcana and line them up in order and then kind of devise a story based around the characters that are represented there. And it's kind of something that you want to familiarize yourself with anyway. There was actually a novel written in the, I want to say the 1600s, that was built around a group of people who had come from different cultures and sat down to a table and showed each other the tarot major arcana and sort of were able to relate to one another through the symbols in those cards. I don't remember the name of the book offhand, but it's something that you might want to look into. If you're interested in kind of taking those cards and moving them beyond divination alone. This novel, from what I have understood of it, is talking about like the idea that these people didn't speak the same language, and you know, all they had was pictures, so they were pointing at symbols in the cards to sort of try and relate their points to each other.
Mm-hmm.
What I've encountered occasionally too is in mentions of pagan parenting that I've encountered through various books that I've read, people talk about using the tarot as a way to introduce your children to occult symbolism, and kind of getting further into it as they get older. If you've got an interest in things like the Kabbalah or psychology, there are different books about tarot that you can look up that will talk about those aspects and bring you even deeper into an understanding of the cards and how you can use those to touch on deeper and deeper subject matter in a reading for yourself or for other people.
In fact, Dorothy Morris, a wonderful lady, if you've never talked to her, go see her at a gathering someplace, came up with a deck called the Whimsical Tarot, which uses not only the standard tarot symbolism, but uses fairy tales as part of those presentations of the various aspects of the cards. For instance, the Two of Cups is represented by the owl and the pussycat story. And when you actually stop and think about it, it's a perfect representation. The owl is marrying a cat. Here's a flyer and something that is landbound, but they're together and they're going to make something even better. The Two of Rods is represented by the story of the lion and the mouse, where the mouse is chewing through the net to release the lion. And it's the lion, you know, waiting for a fulfillment and the mouse helping him out. And that's, you know, all through there, and that's another way of, you know, using the tarot to introduce not only symbolism to children, but to give it to them in terms that they can relate to.
Yeah, for sure. That's the thing with tarot decks. I mean, there are so many different ones that you can use to relate to younger people or older people, more specialized groups of people. Don't be afraid to have more than one deck. If you're the type who's collecting it just for the artwork, that's why I own most of my decks too. I mean,
yeah,
there are some that are just.
Yeah, there was one deck that I collected that I've never read from. I've never really gone through. It's called the Numerological Tarot, and it is such a different animal, but it is so symbolism rich, even though there's next to no artwork on it. Simply due to the fact that it was, you know, a different deck, a different way of reading. Different sets of symbols with familiar cards. There was one deck that I saw reviewed with the American Tarot Association where it was called the Transparent Tarot, which was basically a bunch of cards that were made out of clear plastic. They had very specific symbols in very specific areas on the card itself, and it was usually just one symbol, like somebody kneeling. But when you laid that card down and put another card on top of it, say somebody with a sword, the combination of the two cards together would show a man with a sword holding it over somebody that was kneeling. And from that, you would interpret what it meant. And it was so fascinating to look at the interplay between them because it was such a radical way of doing things. There was one lady that I was consulting with at one point who wanted to come up with her own tarot deck and couldn't come up with a back design. And I suggested to her that maybe she use the backs of the cards for an alternate representation of this same card. For instance, instead of using a reversal of the Two of Wands, use the back of that card for the opposite meaning, the other side of the coin, as it were. And she was absolutely just blown away by that. And it was like, wow, that is such an idea that nobody has ever really thought about, because then it doesn't matter whether they're upright or reversed. You don't have to learn reverse meanings because you don't have to put all of the same cards, you know, face up or face down, because whichever way is up is the way that they're going to be read. So, yeah, specialty decks like that are fun to look at, fun to play with, because it gives you different ways of doing things.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. And there's actually a really great website called Eclectic, A-E-C-L-E-C-T-I-C, Tarot, that gives you previews of almost every deck on the market, some still in print, some not. And, I mean, if you're looking for a deck and you want a specific theme, by all means, check out Eclectic Tarot, because you'll probably be able to find something close to what you have in mind. If you want like something around animals, I mean, they've got various other, you know, various different sort of themes. If you want something sort of Native American, they've got decks that are like that. I think they even touch on the various Oracle type decks. Mm. So you're looking at Sacred Geometry or like, for instance, the Druid Animal Oracle, or different other kinds of decks like that. Or I think you are even able to look up based on a particular artist. So if you wanted to look up Robin Wood, you could look up Robin Wood. If you wanted to look up Mickey Mueller, it would bring up all the decks that she's designed. Again, same with Will Worthington, who has done a lot of Celtic and Wiccan and Druidic decks. So, you know, find a deck that suits you. Take some time to get to know it. And by all means, you know, if you find yourself becoming habituated to a specific way of doing things, take yourself out of that routine so that you can have a fresh perspective on your cards, on maybe a tarot spread that you're kind of overly familiar with. You know, give yourself a break from the routine. If you want to incorporate further rituals into a reading, incorporate candles or incense or crystals, or, you know, even go so far as to maybe use only the major arcana and throw a couple of dice to sort of choose a card, something like that. You know, like, don't be afraid to play with the tarot. Try different ways of choosing cards. You know, play three card Monty if you want. If there's particular symbols that you're kind of like debating over, pull out cards that are representative for you, and then, you know, give yourself a three card Monty situation and kind of try and find the one that makes the most sense to you or the one that you've been attached to. And if say you're obsessed with the magician, and you put down a couple of other cards in that situation, then you like have someone else shuffle those cards around, move them, flip them, rotate them so that you lose track of them. And you're still fixated on the magician, try and pick one of those cards. And if you're picking the magician, then by all means, it's obvious that that was the card that you were meant to look at. Mm-hmm. If not, you know, chance will direct your hand to another card that maybe is more relevant than the one that you're obsessing over.
Oh.
So, you know, try different ways of using the cards. Don't be afraid to move beyond tarot spreads. Even if you find that you have an oracle deck that has certain spreads that you like, you know,
try other decks. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's like, I have a Mickey Mueller's Voice of the Trees deck, which is Ogham based oracle deck, which with beautiful artwork. But there's a particular spread that I was familiar with from my teenage years when I actually read the 21 Lessons of Merlin before I found out that it was like the hugest controversial book that any druid has ever read. And they call it in The Voice of the Trees the Dragon's Eye spread. So, you know, there's four cards and it's arranged in like a triangle with a card in the center, and it's, you know, each card represents past, present, future, overall kind of thing. You know, I mean, try your cards out in different ways.
Don't be afraid to come up with your own spreads. Not too long ago, I found that I was being really blocked mentally by something, and I didn't really understand what was going on, and I worked really, really hard to try to understand it. None of the spreads that I was able to find actually worked for telling me what was blocking me. And I wound up coming up with a thing called the bondage spread, which looks like a St. Andrew's cross, if you're familiar with those. It's basically an X where you have two cards in not only the left hand and the right hand, which is the top sections, but at the lower left hand, or at the left foot and the right foot, which is the lower part, and then four in the middle for the head and the body, which you then interpret based on the body part. If it's the left hand, it's, you know, something that's negative, it's something outside of you, and then you reinterpret it in columns so that you have four cards in one group and four cards in another group, and then you have commentary. And it really helped show me where I was messing myself up. So don't be afraid to do stuff like that, too.
And if you're having a really rough night trying to pick out a spread, or if you're with the right crowd of people and you're all in a playful mood, you can always play 78 Pickup and, you know, see what cards end up face up, you know, when you've tossed them on the floor. I mean, there's different ways, but don't be too serious about the readings, because it'll become something too strict and restrained for you. Tarot is both a tool, but it's also a toy, you know, like it's supposed to open your imagination and help you get in touch with your intuition, you know, so it's not all about the left brain, structure and format. It's about getting out there and being playful and, you know, enjoying the colors and symbols and, you know, trying out different spreads, or, you know, if like, I don't know, turn it into a drinking game if you want. I don't know how you would, but, you know, don't be afraid to try different ways of using the cards. You know, if you're going to drink enough that you're going to puke on them, maybe, you know, rethink it. But, you know, like, don't be afraid when you're learning or when you're experienced as a tarot reader to try using the cards differently. if you want to meditate on finding a job, for instance, I mean, you could spread out the whole suit of pentacles in a circle around you and kind of contemplate the green, the money, the financial fertility kind of prosperity, you know, different themes that go along with earth and green and money and material comfort, so that you can get yourself in a mindset to prepare a really decent resume that'll sell you properly and get you a job. If you're looking into either picking a school or you're in the midst of studying something, what you can do is surround yourself with the swords and, you know, meditate on all those things that represent the intellect and concentration and disciplined learning and that sort of thing, and, you know, use them that way. So you're getting yourself into a mindset where you're using your mind, body, and imagination to focus yourself on a goal that you're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you said, it is a tool. It is something that you want to play with. And the more time you spend with your deck, the easier it will read for you. I want to break in here because I've got a guest that has come over who is wanting to spread herself for something. So I'm going to let you talk for just a little bit, Brian, while I find out what question she has, and go ahead and do the spread for her. So
okay.
I'm going to put you on mute, take over for a bit. I'll come back in just a second, okay?
Alrighty.
Thanks.
No problem. Okay, so yeah, I mean, again, you know, if you're looking for a job or you want a raise or something, so you can use the pentacles. If you're studying something, you can use the swords. If you want to find yourself a new romance or a new friendship that really, I mean, not completes you, because in a relationship you should be a whole person yourself and find a complement rather than seeking that sort of desperate, clingy relationship where you're incomplete and trying to complete one another. So in that sort of situation, in a romance or a relationship or friendship kind of situation, surround yourself with the suit of cups and take a look at, you know, ways that you can improve how you present yourself on the dating scene or to people that you want to meet. You know, if you're an introvert, you're going to be spending a lot of time sort of trying to sort yourself out anyway. I know this because I am one. So what you can do is use those cards to sort of examine aspects of yourself that maybe you need to shed light on that you're not willing to pay attention to, because perhaps you're just convinced that you are flawless and it's everyone else who's the problem.
Okay.
If you want... Okay, welcome
right,
back.
We're back. Hi. Okay. Her name is Marisha, and she's asked me if she's going to be progressing any further at work. Now, for this, because it's a more general reading than a yes or no question, I decided to use the Celtic cross spread. And as we went over last week, this is, you know, the go-to reading for just about everything. In the number one position came up the Emperor. The Emperor is, you know, generally a gentleman that is in charge. He is the culmination of all the kings, like I said earlier. He is also, in this case, representing the question, which is the job. And, you know, since he is an older gentleman, he has actually had a job and been very, very successful in the job. The crossing, which is the number two position, came up with the Eight of Swords. The Eight of Swords depicts this beautiful lady who's blindfolded and tied hand and foot with eight swords around her while a tide comes in. This is the more extreme version of the Two of Swords. And that usually means that this is a situation that you find yourself in where you feel absolutely helpless, and it's not one that you actually came up with and put yourself into. the root of the problem, the number three card, is the Seven of Cups. The Seven of Cups is the Dreamer's card. It shows seven cups in this girl's hair, and each one of the cups is filled with a different item. There are so many choices available, you don't know what to choose, and you're so busy daydreaming that you can't settle on one thing or another. So far what's happening is that she feels that she's in a situation that she didn't create, which at work would be, you know, pretty accurate, and that there's so much that she can do and so much that she wants to do that she's not able to motivate herself to get going on something. In the recent past, the number four card, the Hermit has come up, which is a man seeking the truth. He's looking around for things that are of importance to him, something that is going to help him grow further, which is something that she's probably done very close to now. In the present position, we have the Magician, who is the person that manifests what they want from next to nothing, simply through sheer force of will. The recent future is going to be the Three of Rods, which we're going to talk about next week, which is waiting for your ship to come in. And in this case, the ship is actually coming in at this point. So given this part, I'm seeing that she has been trying to improve herself for some time, and it hasn't been totally successful, but she's gotten to a point now where she can actually manifest what she wants simply because she wants it. And in the very near future, that's going to start coming into her life and giving her more time and, you know, improving her life and making it a better one. With the commentary cards, how she sees the situation, she sees herself as surrendering to God and saying, okay, God, if it's your will, bring it to me. This is what I would like, but if I'm supposed to have it, I'm willing to wait for your time. What other people are seeing is that she's making excuses because she's not actually participating in bringing those nice things into her life. She's sort of taking the safe route and the same route that she's always taken, where she everyone else. In what crosses or helps her, she's got the Page of Swords, which is somebody that is bringing messages of new fights coming along. And so there's going to be new conflicts. There's going to be new things happening in her life and new challenges, and this is probably going to hinder her a lot. In the final outcome position, it's a wonderful card. It's the Six of Rods, which is the victor riding triumphant into the town on his charger. It's a big celebration, and things are going on, and according to what this reading is saying, at least, that is going to be the final outcome, and that's important because it means that she's going to get what she wants. So that is an example of how to do a quick reading and how to do a complete reading with the Celtic Cross. As you can see, it's a situation of not only knowing the various symbols, but how the symbols relate to each other. Understanding that the Emperor is a gentleman who, you know, has fulfilled his work history and has been doing his thing for a long time, and now he's kind of, you know, pretty much retired, he's still in charge, is great, but not being able to see that in conjunction with the Seven of Cups, wherein you have so many choices, you don't know what to do. Not being able to tie those two together into a coherent reading for somebody is useless. Just knowing what the cards mean, that's important, but you've also got to remember that the cards are telling a story in any reading. It's telling a story about what your client wants to know. And it's your job to find that story and present it to them in a way that they can understand.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the better you can become at determining symbols for yourself, and just in general on the cards and around you, it's something that you kind of want to learn as you go, pick up things, the swords represent communication, maybe something in the news, a big news item, relating to, I don't know, a new scientific discovery, for instance. So kind of take the time to get really broadly familiar with the symbolism of each suit, each card, because in the course of your daily life, you're going to be able to pick up new things to relate each card to.
And one of the there's 100,000 books out there that'll tell you what the cards mean and what they should mean and how you should read those cards. There's not a lot of books out there that tell you about how to do readings. They tell you what the cards mean, but they don't tell you how to relate them to each other. One of the books that I've found, because I really went looking at one point for how to do a reading, not how to do the spreads, but how to do the reading and relate it together. But the book I found is part two of the 78 Degrees of Wisdom. And the second book, because there's a first book and there's a second book. The second book really deals with the minor arcana, the court cards, and how to do a reading instead of just what the cards mean. And unfortunately, most books out there that I know of talk about simply what the cards mean and not how to put them together so that somebody can understand it in a reading. And that's one of the things where the practice comes in, where reading for your friends comes in. Even just doing a spread for yourself and seeing what the cards mean together so that you can start relating them into that interactive story, like I said.
Yeah, definitely. It's all about gaining experience, looking at different resources for learning. There are YouTube videos out there that'll help you gain some familiarity, tons of websites. I think Eclectic has an online forum that you can join and discuss and, probably connect with people who have your deck. I know there was a traditional witchcraft forum that I was on a few years back that had specifically a tarot topic, and you could talk to people about various different decks and their experiences with them. So if you're looking for a particular deck, find some people who have that deck. Facebook probably has tons of tarot groups. I've no idea. I've not been on Facebook for tarot in ages.
I tend to avoid Facebook whenever I can.
Yeah, so do I. Just take the time to learn new things. Consider how each suit, because a lot of the cards, the artwork is so antiquated. Get familiar with their general symbolism.
Yeah. And in some cases, the artwork is so packed. I mean, you got to get a whole lot of symbolism into a card that's, 3x5. And so, artists have this huge canvas the size of a door to draw the card on and to put, this little white flower down in a corner that for them is 10 inches high and, stands out like nobody's business. But when you shrink that down to a 3x5 card, it vanishes into the background. So what that flower means in the overall card, is lost when you get it that small. So that's another reason to work with the deck and try to find out what all those little symbols mean. And, once again, get the book that comes with the deck, not the little book that's in the deck itself that gives you the cheat sheet. but the one where the card authors actually talk about the entire creation process of that card. And just about every deck out there, you can find something along those lines. I know I've found them for the not only the Robin Wood deck, but the Morgan Greer deck, the Whimsical Tarot. There was a Japanese deck at one point that I found that had a card book that came with it. And usually it only costs another, you know, $10 or $11 to pick that up at the same time you get the deck. And I know that Amazon will very helpfully guide you to that book when you're looking at the deck.
Yeah, very typically that's it'll say you can buy these together.
Yeah, for
only
$25.
It won't give you any sort of discount, mind you, but it won't offer a discount on the purchase. But nonetheless, it will say buy these two together, and it'll cost you exactly what each price says.
But it does give you the guide you over to that book. And if it doesn't, it'll give you a decent book. And on the subject of books, like I was saying, you know, be aware of what you're buying. There are good tarot books and there are bad tarot books. And for the most part, the basic symbolism isn't going to change between the various decks and the various books. So all of them are going to say basically the same thing. It's in the nuances where the differences start occurring. And also, you know, there's personalities for the decks as well. For instance, the Thoth deck I found to be extremely dark. Everything is gloom, doom, and despair. I found that the Hello Kitty deck is actually very upbeat and bright and happy.
You don't say.
No, I mean, really. It all depends on, you know, what you're drawn to. If you're drawn to dark gloom and despair, then, you know, that's what you get. But if you're, you know, a pink goth, you may want to get into the Hello Kitty stuff. It just depends on, you know, what you're attracted to, what your intuition is telling you you would like to read with, and what you feel that you would be able to read well with. And that's more the key than anything else. You can study decks, you can study the books, you can look at the various artists and read up on everything. But if you're not going to read well with a deck, then I don't care how easy it is for you, it's just not going to read well. So you have to listen to that intuition and figure out, you know, is this going to read for me? I mean, it could be the easiest deck to read for everybody else in the world, but if it doesn't speak to you, then it's not going to speak to you. It's just as simple as that.
Exactly. I mean, you know, if you've got friends who are really into tarot, you know, ask them if you can, like, take a look at their decks. I mean, some people are really strict about who can handle them or how. I don't tend to be that concerned with that sort of thing, just because my knowledge is more in the symbolism and being able to relate symbols to situations and not as much a concern about the cards being overly sacred, I guess you could call it. Mm-hmm. Whereas some people are
like
very strict about it. Well, exactly. I mean,
it's, you know, there's people that have rituals with their working tools on their altar. Where they're there and ready for use, and they don't want anybody touching them, and that's their taboo. And, you know, it is literally a taboo, where it is a ritual restriction, and if that taboo gets broken, there's going to be consequences, there's going to be penalties, it won't read right, and the same with the tarot decks. I mean, the tarot is a tool just like your athame is, and if you decide that you don't want somebody else handling your deck, then when they do, it's going to mess that up. You know, one of my rituals is I will shuffle my deck for myself and ask the querent their question. They will tell me, and I will shuffle the deck and lay out the spread. They don't ever touch it unless I'm directed during the reading that they need to choose a card or they need to do this, that, or the other. And then I'll wrap it up in a very specific kerchief that I've got, and put it into the leather bag that I made for that deck. And other than that, you know, it's and those are my rituals for my deck. And you'll develop those yourself, and it's just a matter of what feels right and what you feel is important and what you feel isn't.
And yeah, for sure. And, I mean, as we said in the first episode, don't develop really meticulous rituals for each deck, because otherwise you're going to get so caught up in the rituals that you do with those decks that you're going to sort of lose concentration on what you're using those for. If you've got a specific way you do a reading, then be comfortable doing that with any deck that you own. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, again, you're going to get caught up in the meticulous sort of need to do the specific ritual for that deck, which will distract you.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to take the readings and the rituals from that you learned from one deck and use them with another, like you were saying. I know that there's the cheat books and the big books for the various decks will give you specialized readings. Like with the Housewives Tarot, one of the readings that's in there is the Martini reading, and it's about relaxation and partying, but you lay the cards out in the shape of a martini glass. Well, I did that with the Celtic Tarot at one point, and it read just fine. It's just another way of reading and interpreting the cards. It's not something that is specifically only for that deck.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're going to find a lot of different decks have different names for very common spreads. I've seen the Celtic Cross named a few different ways. There's one book, I think, that had it as the Sword and Shield spread. You know, don't get caught up on the names for those spreads. Just worry about, you know, being able to use the spreads themselves. There's one that I really liked from the Druid Animal Oracle, I think, called the... it's a 9-card spread where you have, like, the top 3 representing mental, the middle 3 representing, like, emotional, and then the bottom 3 representing physical, and then the standard left to right past, present, future. And I find that's a useful, simple spread to work with if I want to, like, do a quickie spread for someone, you know, who's come up to me with a question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got a couple minutes left of the show. Just over a minute and a half, actually.
One last point. Don't be afraid to steal blatantly from other readers as well. I stole one of my standard spreads called the Life Choices spread from somebody that I saw lay it out one time, and I thought that it was such a nifty spread that I grabbed it and I use it all the time. So that's another thing that you can do. So, okay, next week we're going to be talking about the Emperor and the Hierophant, who are cards 4 and 5, I'm pretty sure. And
yeah.
We're going to be talking about the 3s. So make sure you get your deck set up and those cards pulled out for next time. And I guess we'll talk to you then.
Yep. We will definitely see you next week, folks. Join us on February 6th for the premiere of The Witching Hour. Same time, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, sorry. I have to remind myself of that because I'm in Pacific. And stay tuned on our channel, blogtalkradio.com/woodwose, for upcoming episodes. Feel free to email me at woodwose.radio@yahoo.ca if you have questions or suggestions.
And don't be afraid to email me your questions on tarot@joy.a.philip@gmail.com. I'll be happy to answer them live on the show or send you back an email if it's necessary. And please, if you have readings that you would like me to do live on the air, come in. We have the chat room open. We have our email open. And, you know, the call lines are open as well.
Thank you very much.
Take care.